now discuss about the labor laws which are applicable to healthcare institution. We have already discussed part one, the second part of it now. So under that, let us first discuss the Minimum Wages Act, which is a very important topic. This was introduced in the year 1948, and basically it fixed up a minimum rate of for employment according to the categories. And this has, I would say, to a great extent, a lot of workers were initially exploited for very low sums of money, which has now been prevented to a great extent with the introduction of such acts. So let us first come to the introduction. This is an act to provide for fixing the minimum rate of wages in certain employments, you know, so below which the employer cannot take in an employee. This act extends to the whole of India except for the state of Jammu and Kashmir. So everywhere it's applicable. The competent authority means that the authority appointed by the appropriate government by notification in the official gazette to ascertain from time to time. It's all basically dependent on the living index applicable to the employees in the scheduled employment specified as per the notifications. So the minimum rate of wages were fixed basically in the following manner. The appropriate government may fix a minimum rate of wages for time work, minimum rate of wages for piece work, and a minimum rate to apply in substitution for the minimum rate which would otherwise be applicable in respect of overtime work done by the employees. So even if the employee was working overtime, there was a rate fixed at that, because otherwise in the absence of this, you know, employees were made to work say half a day, 2-3 hours more, but nothing was fixed up. So they might be paid, them might not be paid. In this case, everything was fixed, so the workers' interests were protected. In fixing or revising wages under this section, differing minimum rate of wages may be fixed for, number one, different scheduled employment, different classes of work for the same scheduled employment, for adults, adolescents, children and apprentices, and different localities. So the minimum rate of wages fixation, for example, there is a basic wage plus special allowance, that is the minimum wage. Wages in kind, as per section 11, minimum wages payable under this act shall be in cash. Where there has been the custom to pay wages only partly or in kind, appropriate government is of the opinion that it is necessary in the circumstances by notification in the official gazette to authorize the payment to be either made in cash wholly or partly in kind. The appropriate government is also of the opinion that provision should be made for the supply of essential commodities should be provided to such workers at concessional rates. Inspectors. The government may appoint an official notification person if it thinks fit for the inspectors for this act, and it may also define the local limits within which they have to function. So, you know, every area would have a inspection officer who can carry out this job. The inspectors may examine any person whom he finds in such premises or place and has a reason to believe that such person is an employer or an employee who works there. The inspector may also seize or take copies of registers, record of wages, notices or portion thereof as he may consider relevant in respect of an offence under this act to which he has a reason to believe that has been committed by an employer. So the law is now so strict that, you know, they have the inspectors have the right to enter the premises, to take the details from the employer, to check the registers of the wages being paid, notices, etc. Let us discuss the penalties in relation to certain offences. The provision of the Minimum Wages Act shall be punishable with imprisonment for 6 months or a fine which shall not exceed 500 or sometimes both. Furthermore, the penalty for willfully obstructing the inspector in exercise of any power conferred unto him by the Act or fails to produce any demand made by the inspector in respect of the wages of registers, records or documents which are in the custody of the employer shall be punished with the fine which may extend to rupees 500 or conviction. For part-time workers, so there are many organizations where they have employees who work part-time, so maybe 4 or 5 hours a day. So any claim of employees in any of these in these employment working up to and inclusive of 4 hours per day, so 60% of the total fees that has been fixed or the wages that have been fixed for a full-time employer would be payable. For purpose of this notification, competent authority means the competent authority appointed by the Government of Maharashtra, Industries, Energy and Labour Department as per this notification, which now let us see the zone system. Zone 1, it shall compromise of the areas within the limits of the municipal corporations and adjoining cantonment areas, if any. Zone 2 shall compromise the areas within with the limits of all A-class municipal council and adjoining cantonments areas, if any. Zone 3 shall compromise the rest of areas of the state excluding areas in Zone 1 and 2. In case where the employee is employed on basis other than the monthly basis, the minimum rate of daily wages payable shall be computed by dividing the minimum rate of monthly wages fixed for the category of employees to which he belongs by 26, that is the number of working days, the portion being stepped up to the nearest paisa. So that's how it is calculated in case the employee is working on besides being on a monthly basis, then that's the way of calculating it. The minimum rate of wages shall consist of an all-inclusive rate allowing for the basic rate, the cost of living allowance and cash value of concessions, if any. Payment of the Wages Act 1936. The Payment of Wages Act was passed in 1936 and the objective was this act was to ensure regular and timely payment, very important, of wages to the employed persons, because you know these people, they need to have their payments on time. Without this act, you know, a lot of employees were being exploited as far as the date of the payments were concerned, but with this they are protected. This is basically to prevent unauthorized deductions being made from wages and arbitrary fines being imposed on the employed persons. Rules for payment of wages. Responsibility for payment of wages. Every employer is responsible for the payment to persons employed by him of all the wages required to be paid under the Payment of Wages Act. In factories, the person named as manager. In industrial or other establishment, the person who is responsible to the employer for the supervision and the control of the industrial or the establishment. Upon railways, the person nominated by the railway administration in this behalf the local area concerned. Now, fixation of the wage periods. Every person responsible for the payment of wages under Section 3 shall fix periods known as the wage periods in respect of which such wages shall be payable. A wage period shall not exceed 1 month. In other words, payment of wages can be made either daily, weekly, fortnightly or monthly. So time for the payment of wages. Wages to be paid on or before 7th or the 10th day. That's generally the thumb rule. Wages in case of termination of employment, where the employment of any person is terminated by or on behalf of the employer, the wages earned by him shall be paid before the expiry of the second working day from the day on which his employment is terminated. Exemption. The state government may by general or special order exempt the person responsible for the payment of wages from operation of the above provision in certain cases. And wages to be paid on working day. All the payment of the wages shall be made on working days. So what is the medium of payment of wages as per Section 6? They are paid either in current coin or currency notes or both. Payment of wages in kind is not permitted. According to Section 6 of the Act, the employer may, after obtaining the written authorization of the employed person, pay him the wages either by check or by crediting the wages directly in his or her bank account. Deductions from the wages. The deduction from the wages of the employed person may be of the following kinds only, namely deduction for fines. That is also after informing and ideally after putting it on the notice board that this person has been fined. Deductions for absence from duty, deductions for damage or losses, deductions for services, and deductions for recovery of advances. So these are the cases in which deductions can be done. Deductions for recovery of loans, deductions for payment to cooperative societies and insurance schemes. These deductions shall include the deductions for payments to cooperative societies and to a scheme if insurance. Which are the other deductions? Deductions of income tax payable by the employed person. Deductions required to be made by the order of court or any competent authority. Deductions for payments to cooperative societies. Deduction of advances for any provident from any provident fund. Deduction for payments of premium for insurance. Deductions with the authorization of employee for the contribution of the Prime Minister's National Relief Fund or any such fund that may be specified from the, by the central government by time to time. But this has to be informed to the employee. Now, what are the limits on deduction? The total amount of deduction which may be made under the above heads in a wage period from the wages of an employed person shall not exceed 75% of the wages. Maintenance of registers and records under section 13A. This is very important. Every employer has to maintain registers and records giving the following particulars of the persons employed by him: the work performed by them, the wages performed by the wages paid to them, the deductions made from their wages, and the receipts given by them. So all these records have to be maintained. The registered and records shall be in such form as may be prescribed. They shall be preserved for a period of 3 years after the last date of last entry made therein. The Payment of Bonus Act, which came into existence in 1965, its objective was to maintain peace and harmony amongst employees and employer. The term bonus is not defined in the Payment of Bonus Act 1965, but Webster's International Dictionary defined bonus as something given in addition to what is ordinarily received by or strictly due to the recipient. So typically in India, if we see bonus is very in Diwali, there is a Diwali bonus. So now there is no exact definition which is given in this act. The scheme of the act is three-dimensional: to define the principle of payment of bonus according to the prescribed formula, to pay for payment of minimum and maximum bonus, and linking the payment of bonus with the scheme of set off and set on, and to provide machinery for the enforcement of liability for payment of bonus. So these are the three dimensions of this act. Salary or wage, it means all remuneration capable of being expressed in terms of money, which would if the terms of employment expressed or implied. Eligibility of bonus: every employee shall be entitled to be paid by this employer on in an accounting year bonus in accordance with the provision of this act. How do you determine bonus? The act has laid down a detailed procedure for calculating the amount of bonus payable to the employees. First of all, gross profit is calculated as per first or second schedule. From his gross profit, the sums deductible under section 6 are deducted, which we have just discussed. To this figure we add the sum which is equal to the difference between the tax calculated on gross profit for the previous year and the direct tax calculated on gross profit arrived after deducting the bonus paid or payable to employees. But as a thumb rule, generally, for majority of the organizations where salary structures are in the range of say 8,000 to 20,000-25,000, a month's salary is what is generally considered as bonus, where the employee strength is generally in the range of say anywhere from 20 to 100. So that's how they calculate it, but this is actually a way of calculating it. Computation of gross profit, section 4. The computation of gross profits for an accounting year is done for the purpose of the bonus formula is the first step. It is calculated according to section 4 of this act. The starting point is the computation of the gross profit is the net profit as shown in the profit and loss account after making usual and necessary provisions. Items to be added back to net profit: the following items shall be added to the net profit of the relevant accounting year shown in the year's P&L statement. Provision for bonus to employees and bonus paid in respect of previous accounting years to the extent charged to the profit and loss account. Provision for depreciation. Provision for direct taxes, including the provision, if any, for previous accounting years. Provisions for development rebate, development allowance reserve to the extent charged to profit and loss account, and provision for any other reserves to the extent charged to the profit and loss accounts. So that's how it's calculated. The amount debited in respect of gratuity paid or payable to employees in excess of the aggregate of the amount, if any, paid or provided to payment an approved gratuity fund, and the amount actually paid to an employee on their retirement or on termination of their employment for any reason. Now, donations in excess of the amount admissible for income tax: any annuity due or commuted value of annuity paid under the provision of section 280D of the Income Tax Act 1961 during the accounting year. This is capital expenditure and capital losses. So what is capital expenditure? Other than the capital expenditure on scientific research, which is allowed, and deduction under any law relating to direct taxes, and capital losses, other than the losses on sale of capital assets on which depreciation has been allowed for income tax or agricultural income tax to the extent charged to the profit and loss account. Again, this is important. Losses of or expenditure relating to any business situated outside India, income, profits or gains if any credited directly to reserves other than capital receipts and capital profit, profits of and receipts relating to any business situated outside India, and income of foreign concerns from investments outside India. Now, there are certain items which need to be deducted. So, the following items shall be deducted from the aggregate of the items added back to the net profit as discussed above, namely capital receipts and capital profits. So, these are other than the profits on the sale of assets on which depreciation has been allowed for income tax or agriculture and income tax to the extent credited to the profit and loss account. Profits of and receipts relating to any business situated outside India to the extent credited to the profit and loss account. Income of foreign concerns from investment outside India to the credit to the extent credited to the profit and loss account. And expenditure or losses, if any, debited directly to reserves other than the capital expenditure and capital losses which we have discussed, other than the losses which are on the sale of capital assets on which depreciation has already been claimed. Also, in cases of losses of any business situated outside India. Now, in the case of foreign concerns, proportionate administrative overhead expenses of head office allocable to Indian businesses, refund of any direct tax paid for previous accounting years and excess provision, if any, of previous accounting years relating to bonus, depreciation, taxation or development rebate or development allowance if written back to the extent credited to the PLN account. Cash subsidy, if any, given by the government or anybody corporate established by any law for the time being in force or by any other agency to budgetary grants. Determination of available surplus under Section 5. The next step after the determination of gross profits in the manner discussed above is the determination of what is the available surplus. Sums deductible from gross profit. Section 6 specified that sums are to be deducted from gross profit as prior charges. These sums are as follows. Any amount by way of depreciation admissible in accordance with the provision of Section 32 of the Income Tax Act 1961 or in accordance with the provisions of the Agricultural Income Tax Law as the case may be. Any amount by way of development rebate or investment allowance or development allowance which the employer is entitled to deduct from his income under the Income Tax Act 1961. Any direct tax which the employer is liable to pay for the accounting year in respect for his income, profits and gains during that year or any other sum specified in respect of the employer in the third schedule. The amount which remains after deducting the above sums known as prior charges from the gross profit is basically the available surplus for distribution as bonus. On this available surplus, 67% in case of company and 60% in other cases shall be allocable surplus, which is the amount available for payment of bonus to employees. So, after all these calculations, whatever is the available surplus, in case of companies, it is 67%, and in all other cases, it is 60% shall be the amount which is allocated for bonus to employees. Allocable surplus, after determining the available surplus, the employee share known as allocable surplus is to be determined. So, amount of bonus. The bonus formula is envisaged in the acts provided for the payment of minimum and maximum bonus to the employees in an accounting year. So, the minimum bonus is 8.33% of the salary or wage earned by the employee during the accounting year or rupees 100, whichever is higher. Even if the employer suffers losses during the accounting year, he is bound to pay minimum bonus as prescribed by Section 10. So, even if the employer says I have occurred loss in the previous year in business, still he is eligible to pay a minimum bonus as prescribed by Section 10. So, how is the minimum bonus? It is generally 8.33% of the salary or wage earned by the employee or rupees 100, whichever is higher. So, the fourth schedule. In this schedule, the total amount of bonus equals to 8.33% of the annual salary or wage payable to all employees and is assumed to be rupees 1,04,167 rupees. Accordingly, the maximum bonus to which all employees are entitled to be paid, 20% of the annual salary or wage of all employees, would be rupees 2,50,000.